your money's worth. Will it give you enough information? Are you getting an education? Hope so. All right, because today we're going to finish up types of mutual funds and hopefully get to mutual fund families and discuss the assignment sheets. We'll pass out the assignment sheets, discuss what the assignment is. Next Thursday, probably, we're on schedule. We'll see. The exam number one on chapters 1 and 4, we'll have time to discuss it on Tuesday. If not, if we slow down, then we'll move it back a week, but I don't know if that'll work. Assignment for chapter 1 is due next week. So you're working on that, doing your short-term investments, taking a look at banks and credit unions around the nation, and treasurydirect.gov. Any questions on that? No? Okay. Who got a good joke? Who's got a good joke? Anybody? Nobody has a good joke? Did I tell you about the alligator that walked into the bar? And the bear?
Yep.
And the mushroom?
Yep.
The sandwich?
Yep.
The neutron?
Yep.
Yeah? How about the giraffe?
Oh, yeah.
Did I tell? No, I didn't tell you about the giraffe in last semester. Yeah, that was last.
About a lion,
what?
I want you to hear something about a lion.
The lion? I don't know about a lion. I have to figure out a lion one. But this giraffe walks into the bar. Have you heard this one before?
Yeah.
No. And the bartender says, "What do you have?" And the giraffe looks down. What looks down at him and scowls. He goes, "Oh right, two high balls." It's a drink. A highball is a drink. Sometimes the giraffe has a long neck. A long beard. Okay, see, they get worse. I told you, I warned you, you don't believe me. What? Someday you're going to come up with something better? Okay. It's not hard to do. I'm going to even tell you one I made. Actually, I just didn't when they came through. We went through the stock mutual funds. And, some of you don't have this guy. Because you either lost it or whatever. So what I did is I put it on the back of the case study that we'll discuss on Tuesday. So pass those around. You'll have two sheets. Some of you will have two of these. But if you don't have this, then you will have that. You will have the scramble sheet. So we looked at aggressive growth funds. We looked at capital appreciation funds, growth and income, value funds, and equity income funds. And we saw that went from the riskiest stock funds down to the least riskiest stock funds. And then we overlaid on top of that more classifications, large cap, mid cap, small cap, meaning the stock company size, and we'll discuss capitalization in detail when we get the stocks. And then where the company is based, domestic, global, and international, saying that it's just not that important anymore. And we discussed these regional and sector funds. We'll take a look at some examples when we get to Fidelity because they've got plenty of them. Now we're ready to start bonds. We're going from the riskiest on the left-hand side to the least risky on the right-hand side. Bonds. Boring old bonds. But wait a minute. We're going to have the same kind of spectrum because some bonds are risky. And we call those bond funds high yield or high income. Doesn't that sound nice? High yield, high income?
Yep.
You know what we really call them?
High risk.
High risk and junk.
Junk bonds?
Junk bonds, yeah, junk bonds. What a great name. Isn't that a great name for a bond? Wouldn't you want junk? Well, you know, it depends on who you are. But these bonds are bonds that are associated with companies and sometimes municipalities that are in trouble, that are sometimes called distressed bonds. And so when you have a really bad credit rating and somebody says, "Sure, I will lend you money, but what am I going to do, huh? If I lend you money, what am I going to charge you?"
High.
Everyone says high interest. Wait till I ask you. If I lend you money and you have a bad credit score, what are you going to get? How are you going to get charged? High interest. So, hey, if you're speculatively inclined, junk bonds may be for you. And it turns out, we might get a chance to see this today, that when you deal in high yield junk bonds, it turns out that they are more often correlated with stocks than they are with bonds. And what does correlation mean? We'll discuss what?
Related.
Related, right. They will discuss the inverse relationship typically of stocks and bonds much later on. But these things start to look like stock funds. They not as risky usually sometimes, but they are more associated with stocks than they are with bonds. Here is the next category, corporate bonds. Usually very high rated. We'll discuss the AAA, AAA, BBB, BBB. But these are middle of the road companies, large companies that everyone knows, or at least, you know, they're in the industry, and you can feel very assured that they're going to pay their debts. Are we going to get more interest or less interest from these bonds than the high yield? We're going to get more interest or less interest than less. Less risk, less return. And then you may be interested in convertibles somewhere down the line. We'll discuss those when we get to preferred securities. Sounds exciting. Convertible. Doesn't convertible sound exciting? And then the next group are municipal bond funds. These are bonds that are issued by state and local governments, cities, Southwestern Community College. You can buy Southwestern Community College bonds. And when we get the bonds, I ask you to look up a couple of Southwestern Community bonds. Community College bonds. And you can see that we have a pretty darn good rating. We're considered, we'll pay our debts. Some bonds are insured by insurance companies. They obviously, if you get an insured bond, it's going to be less risky because the company is backing up if the bond goes under, so it's going to pay less return. And as we discussed, municipal bonds are free from federal income tax. Did we discuss this in real quickly? Maybe not. Municipal bonds at the state and local government level are free from federal income tax. If you buy a bond fund in your state, and we'll see some state-specific bond funds, if you buy a bond for example, us, California, if you buy a California municipal bond fund, not only do you not pay federal income taxes, you won't pay state income taxes. The state of California will say, cool, you're our resident, you're buying our bonds in our state. It doesn't have to be state. It could be the city of Chula Vista, Southwestern Community College, anywhere in the state. We'll not make you pay the state income tax. So these are very popular with high net worth individuals, rich people. And then the last group are the U.S.-backed bonds and the United States Treasury bonds. We will discuss this U.S. backing. Have you heard of Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac? Fannie Mae is not a candy company, folks. It's not a candy company. This company has been around for many decades, and its partner, its competitor, Freddie Mac, and there's a Sally Mae for student loans. These entities were sponsored by the United States Congress. Private companies, but there was an implicit. You understand what implicit means? Implicit, unspoken. There was an unspoken or thought of backing by the United States government, so that if these companies got in trouble, the Congress, the government would back them up. But for decades, they said, no, we're not going to do that. We are not backed by the United States government. We were sponsored by the Congress, but we're not backed by the government until 2008 came along. And now each and every one of you and me are proud owners of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Aren't you happy about that? The banks have paid back all the money we lent them. So you hear people say, oh, the banks got bailouts. Yeah, they got, but they paid it all back. Will Fannie and Freddie ever pay it all back? No. Because there are thousands, hundreds of thousands, probably not a couple million, but there are hundreds of thousands of mortgages that are just gone, and many are still waiting to be foreclosed upon. And that's what these people were in the business of. They were in the business of backing behind the banks and credit unions as they made loans. And we'll discuss that later on. And then the granddaddy of them all, the United States Treasury. Is the United States government going to pay its taxes, folks? Not pay its taxes. Pay its debts?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Right now we're having a political problem. It's not an economic problem. We can pay our debts, folks. Trust me. The United States government, I am sure of that. I am positive. If the political mechanism works, if the Republicans, it's a big if, right? Well, they can't be that stupid. I mean, they can be stupid, but not that stupid. Because if they did that, oh boy, what a mess. Oh boy, what a mess it would be. Well, you got to pay your debts, all right? It's that simple.
They spend more than they want.
Right, and we've been doing that for many years, and we'll it's going to come down. Trust me, it's going to come down. We'll see. You know, if the world falls apart, it doesn't really matter, does it? Where you put your money? If you really believe, and there's some people that are survivalists. If you really believe the world is going to end, the technologically based civilization is going to crack and fall apart, and there's going to be rioting in the streets, and no, should you buy guns?
Grenades?
Swords.
Swords?
No, get out of the northern hemisphere! Go down to Tierra del Fuego. Learn to raise goats. I'm serious! Because there ain't going to be no place safe in the northern hemisphere. Maybe somewhere in the Saharan Desert somewhere. You're lucky, but the northern hemisphere, no. Southern hemisphere, some places will be cool. Like maybe Tasmania or something. You think I'm joking, don't you? I'm not serious. Okay. And then on top, so here we are, the riskiest down to the least risky. And then on top of that, we're going to overlay a few more categories. Long-term bonds. Where should I put that? Over here. Long-term bonds. Intermediate-term bonds. And short-term. Now, which of these do you think is the riskiest? Which do you think is the riskiest, the least riskiest? Now, be careful. Yeah, you see, L, long, large, S, small, short, and mid and intermediate are kind of the same, right? No, it's exactly the opposite. It's the long term are the riskiest. The short term are the least risky. And when you think, even though it sounds counterintuitive, when you think about it, it makes perfect sense. If you're going to lend your money out for 6 months or 10 years, which one's riskier?
10 years.
10 years, right? The longer you lend the money out, the more chances, the more time for things to screw up. If you're lending your money out for 6 months, unless the world falls apart quickly, you should get your money back. And that's why short-term bonds start to look like money markets. Because remember the money market, the short-term investments? 60 days, 90 days, 270-day short-term investments. Short-term bonds start to look like money market funds in that they're fairly safe. Long-term bonds, because there's a long time before you get your money back, are inherently riskier. But they also have an opportunity for greater reward. Does that make sense? Risk versus return. If you're shopping for a mortgage, look at the price for the interest rate for the 30-year mortgage, and then look at the price for the 15-year mortgage. You see, the banks and the credit unions will automatically give you 0.5% less. Or more, sometimes less than 0.5%. But because you're going to get the money, they're going to get the money back sooner, they give you a better rate. That makes sense, doesn't it? And then on top of that, we will again interweave or overlay domesticity. Are they domestic bonds, global bonds, or international bonds? Cool. Bonds are pretty boring, as we'll see. So if you're the kind of person who really does not like excitement, you should pick one of the bond funds, because I don't know if I have enough stock funds. Now, the next category in terms of risk versus return is balanced funds. balance funds. And these have been around for as long as mutual funds have been around, because many people have seen the advantages of mixing, generating a balanced return of both current income using bonds and long-term capital gains using stocks. So they invest in both stocks and bonds. And you might say, Piano, don't they belong somewhere in between? I mean, if you mix something that's very risky with something that's a whole lot less risky, shouldn't you get something? No, that's the counterintuitive part. It turns out that when you mix stocks and bonds, you get something that exhibits less risk than either stocks alone or bonds alone. Now remember from chapter 1, can we measure risk very well? No. So measured by standard deviation, by volatility, these things turn out to be better. And why is that? Because often when stocks are doing well, bonds are not doing well, or just sort of doing nothing. And when stocks do poorly, bonds often do very well. So there's a balance. They sort of cancel one another out, although I don't like that term. Make sense? Now, be careful, because what we're going to see is we're going to see on the next slide, it gets tricky. Balanced funds will normally keep about 60% stocks, 40% bonds, maybe 50-50. The allocation can change as the investment environment changes and the portfolio managers decide that they're going to do certain things. But here's one of the nation's oldest balance funds. American Balance Fund. How do you like that? What a generic name, right? States that the fund is managed as the complete U.S. investment program of a prudent investor. So they will never be more than 75% stocks, 25% bonds, or less than 50% stocks, 50% bonds. So they keep that balance. Are you with me? Understand? So these are excellent choices for people who are terrified of their 401k plan and are worried about any kind of allocation. I'm with you. I think balanced funds for younger people are too conservative. But everybody's different. Everybody's different. And so you have to gauge if you're going to recommend investment choices, you have to kind of gauge where their risk is. And there's all these instruments that ask you questions and try to determine what your risk tolerance is. And they're useless because it ain't real money. You know, if you had $10,000 and you lost $4,000, what would you do? Oh, I'd put more in. Yeah, right. When it's really money, when it's your $10,000 that's now worth $6,000, what would you do? I'd throw up. So you have to be careful. But I'm with you. I agree with you, Victor. If you're young, you need to be over here. Definitely. That's my belief. But everybody's different. Now, here's where it gets tricky. Associated with these asset allocation, these balanced funds, are asset allocation funds. The problem is they are typically not the same idea. They're very different depending. You gotta find out who you're dealing with. Asset allocation funds are mutual funds that spread investors' money across stocks, bonds, and money market securities. They're similar to balanced funds. In fact, they're lumped in together. But the investment advisor often more diligently tries to fine-tune the allocation as market conditions change. Whereas a balanced fund will usually stay around 60-40, 50-50, an asset allocation fund might try to move money into cash when they thought the market might fall. They're afraid of stocks and bonds going down, so they'll move everything into cash. Or they think stocks are the place to be, so they'll move everything into stocks. You see what they're trying to do? They're trying to chase the market. You think it's a good idea? I don't. That's up to you. But I don't think it's a good idea. For all their hype, the returns of many asset allocation funds are very close to balanced funds, but some trail balanced funds considerably because they time the market badly. And so I'm not a big fan of these things. But you decide. That's why there's chocolate and vanilla and some people like strawberry. Are you with me?
Napoleon.
What?
Napoleon,
you get all three. Good idea. Now, the last group in our risk versus return. Whoop, wrong color. are the money market funds. And we've already discussed these in detail. The real name is money market mutual funds. Is that what people call them? No, they just call them money markets. And they invest in short-term money market instruments, corporate paper, treasury bills, banker's acceptance notes. They're much the same as the money market accounts of banks and credit unions, except these are not guaranteed by the full faith and credit of the United States government until the organic matter hits the ventilating device. And some of them are actually tax-exempt. Wait a minute. How do they get tax-exempt money markets? Well, here's what they do. They invest in municipal bonds that are ultra-short, that are going to mature in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. So those bonds, those very short muni bonds, look like a cash instrument. They look like a treasury bill. They look like a corporate paper. So that's how they finagle that out. Make sense? So there you have it, folks. Okay, I'm sorry. They are essentially as safe as government, as guaranteed money market accounts, since they invest in exactly the same securities, but they are not guaranteed. We already mentioned that, didn't we? Not guaranteed. Don't tell people they're guaranteed. Tell them they might as well be. And if you're so inclined, just type in breaking the buck into any search engine, and you will see scads of articles about money market mutual funds that have lost a penny. Literally a penny. That's how much they've lost. Because they try to stay at $1, and they're usually pretty good at it. And as they get interest, they pay the interest out, and they keep this. They keep the. Sometimes they're called stable funds in 401k plans. They keep the price at $1. And how do they do that? Every time they get some money from interest, they give you more shares. Keeps the price at $1. Now, if they lose money because they were dumb, or 2008 comes along, that dollar goes down to 99 cents. And the whole world explodes. You know, the financial media splashes it across the entire spectrum of television and radio. And what the company does then is they go to the regulators and say, hey, we screwed up. I told you this, didn't I? Can we take some of our money out of our pocket and put it into the mutual fund to keep it from going to a penny, go down a penny? Didn't I tell you that?
Isn't there a word for that?
Breaking the buck. Oh, commingling. Right. They take some of their money, and you never do that. I told you that. You're not allowed to do this. But in this case, the regulators go, okay, no problem. And if they don't do it, if they can't do it, their competitors or somebody else will do it for them. Yeah, you can say that again? Exactly. You just write a check, some of them. Well, all you do is go online and have it transferred to your checking account. You link your bank account with your money market account, and bingo, it goes right to your, you can just do it overnight. But you can still, they give you a check. Well, on the checks, they'll say, not good for less than $500. They don't want you writing, checks every day. No. It's a short-term investment. Right now they're paying you nothing, some of the point.
Wouldn't it be better just keep the money and just save $5 and more public?
Well, again, it depends on what you're going to use this for. If you need this money for a down payment on a house, are you going to put it into a growth and income or a growth fund?
No.
Are you going to put it into a bond fund? Maybe a short term, very ultra, you'll see them called ultra short. But no, you need it in a money market. That's where you need it. If you need it for a down payment on a house in 30 days because escrow is going to close and you need $50,000 to close escrow, don't put it in the stock market because it could be $40,000 in a week or a day, as we'll see. Yep, it happens. And it'll happen again. Okay, so now, what we've done, and these aren't the only ones, folks. What we've done is we've gone from the most... Let me make sure I need the next slide. I'm sure I'm just... The next slide is yes. Okay, then we only do that later. So we've gone from the riskiest mutual fund to the least risky. And this type of allocation, this type of spectrum, not allocation, spectrum of risk versus return and investment choices is going to be available to you in your 401k. And what you will see, or what you will experience, there he is, is you will hear people at the meeting asking each other questions, going, I don't know, what do you want to do? I don't know. And then some people will say, God, just sit down, right over there. I'm going to put all the money in an aggressive growth fund because I know that over time that's going to do the best. Right? Or you'll see somebody who says, I'm frightened about losing my money. They told me that I need to put it in a money market, or sometimes they'll call it the stable fund in the 401k plan. The stable fund, so that I don't lose any money. Well, does that make any sense if you're young?
No.
Does it make any sense to put it all there?
No.
It depends. If you know what you're doing and you're ready, CA for the capital. If you know that it's going to drop 40-50% 1 year, you don't know when, and you're going to continue to put money in, and you've got, you're 23 years old or 27 years old, and you've got 30, 40 years to go, fine. But that's not what usually happens. What usually happens, as we saw Mr. Vogel, investing, emotions are your enemy. So what I try to do is I try to get people to come into the middle, right? You know, come on, relax. It's not so bad. If they're young, I'll start them off. This is me. You know, everybody's different. I'll start them off with a growth and income fund, my personal favorite. Why? Because it's going to do well over time, should, you know, if the world doesn't end. But when the organic matter hits the Ventolin device, this will go down a whole lot less normally than these will. You with me? And then after a few years, I said, okay, how'd you do when the market lost 20% or 10% or whatever? Oh, I don't even look at my statements. Thank you. Yeah, they don't even look at their statements. They're ready for something more aggressive. You understand? Because it didn't bug them. If they call you up and say, I lost $100. And you wonder how much I lost? Then what do you need to do? Move them over here, right? Get them over here. Maybe for them a balance fund, or if they're really worried, maybe a bond fund. And that's the tricky part, is that emotions get into the act, and then you're in trouble. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Make sense?
Yeah, well, what kind of reward are you going to get with a bond?
Bond funds?
Over 10 years.
What do we expect from bonds?
You said not a lot, but what is that really turn on you?
Do you remember from chapter 1?
Yeah, 2 to 5.
No, 2 to 5 is over here. 2 to 5 was short-term securities. Stocks? 8, 7, 8, 9, 10. I tell people 8, 9, 10. 12. Still tell them that, okay? Bonds? 4 to 6, 7, 8. Right now, less. Right now, they're paying less. And then money markets? 2 to 4 right now, 0.01. Whoa. If you're lucky, I know. Whoa.
Isn't the CD better than the small?
Is the CD better? This is part of chapter 1. You're studying every night, right? Every day? Nod your head, yes. You're studying because that makes me feel so good when you're studying every night. What's the advantage of a CD over a money market? They're going to pay more. Oh, the CD generally is going to pay more than a money market. What's the big disadvantage of a CD? You can touch it, but they're going to penalize you, right? They're going to slap your wrist and take your interest and maybe take some of your principal. So that's the problem with a CD. CDs are cool if interest rates are coming down. You can lock in the rate for a year or two or however long, you know, 5-year CDs, if you can believe that. But if interest rates are going up, does your CD rate change? Some companies, usually credit unions, have what they call the bump. Isn't that cute? The bump. You guys are too young to remember the bump, which was a dance where you bumped against the other person. But if the interest rates go up, they usually allow you one time during the term of the CD to bump up to the current rate. Cute, huh? It's called the... You don't like it. All right, so let's continue. Now, mutual funds of mutual funds. What? You know it had to happen, right? You're right, kidding. No. These things have become very popular. And the reason is because of 401k plans. What these things do is they invest in other mutual funds. And they're called lifestyle funds or target date funds or target risk funds. Your kid's going to go to college in 10 years, or actually 8 years, no, 7 years, 20 years should make it a little higher. Or you're going to retire in 25 years, 23 years. You choose the target date fund that corresponds to when your kid's going to go to college or when you're going to retire. And what will they do? They will populate the mutual fund with other mutual funds to match your suggested allocation for your age or however long you're going, your kid's going to go to college. You understand? And the cool thing about these things from the standpoint of the company is if they look at your date of birth, they can automatically enroll you into the corresponding retirement target date fund or lifestyle fund, and they don't have to get your permission. You have to opt out of the 401k. When a new employee comes in, they will give them some paperwork. And in the past, they would give them some paperwork saying, hey, look, we got this great 401k plan. We matched 50% on the dollar for the first 6% of your salary. Isn't this cool? Don't you want to join? Oh, I'll think about it. They didn't do it. And then when they see all the choices, they go, what do I do? So now the law allows the company to sign them up for the appropriate target date or lifestyle or whatever, like retirement fund. And they can do it. The employee has to opt out. If they don't want to join, they have to opt out. They have to sign something saying, I don't want to be a part of it. And the employee can't sue them for recommendations that are not correct. See, companies are very, very wary to get employees to start in these without opting in, because they want them to make the choice.
The
system is, if the person is 25 years old, sign them up for a retirement 50-50 fund, because that's 30 years from now or 40 years from now. Are you with me? And the Congress has written a law saying if they do that, you cannot sue them for making a bad recommendation. Normally, when anybody recommends any kind of investment to you and you're not happy with that, you can turn around and sue them and say, you gave me a bad recommendation. And some of these people do. I mean, they give horrible recommendations. And so we, as brokers, have to protect ourselves. We have insurance for this, and we make them sign arbitration agreements so that if they're not happy, instead of taking us to a court of law, they'll take us to an arbitration panel. And if it really is egregious, and it usually isn't, usually it's the client who's just bitched because the market went down, right? If it really is egregious, the client should win. But if it's just because they're not happy the market went down, then the arbitration panel or the jury or the courts are going to say, forget it. You know, you were told that you could lose money. Are you? Am I confusing you?
Yeah.
Where? Star where? Where did I confuse you? What? New from the very beginning? That's why you have to read this one?
No.
Start with his joke. Okay. If you say you're 23 years old, when are you going to retire? 10 years from now. Yeah, another 40 years. So what you would do is you would pick the retirement 20. What's 40 years from now? Like 2060? No, 2050. 20. I can't add. The 2050 fund. And the 2050 fund would put you mostly into stocks because you got 40 years before you retire. And as it gets closer and closer to 2050, they're going to start moving you more and more over to the less riskier area. Does that make sense? And the reason they become so popular is because of the law. Let's continue. We'll see some. We'll see some examples today. Now, there are, as we said, thousands of funds. And many of them, you just stay away from folks. Hedge funds aren't even mutual funds. They're lumped in with mutual funds, but they are not even mutual funds. Stay away from these things. They were traditionally only open to sophisticated investors, which meant you had $200,000 of income or $1 million of investable assets, but now they're available to people with as little as $5,000 or $10,000. Stay away. There's no regulatory oversight. There are huge fees, and they can do whatever they damn well please. If they felt that one stock was all they needed to do, boom, they could buy that stock, and that's the whole portfolio. And you pay them 20% of the profits. And they have 1% to 2% operating expense. Stay away. Okay, it's up to you if you do it or not. Bear funds, try to make money when the market goes down. Sometimes it works. But the market goes up about every 3 years. For every 1 year, it goes down. Yeah. Precious metals, hard assets. Normally, mutual funds could not invest in these things, but they've changed the rules some to the point where some of them can invest in gold and silver and commodities. So I don't know how they get away with that. Real estate investment trust funds. They invest in real estate. Very cool if you're into real estate. Problem is there's not that many REITs. There's not that many real estate investment trusts that you can invest in, so they tend to be very concentrated. And then there are all kinds of what are called boutique exotic funds. What do you think the stock car stocks funds invest in? NASCAR. NASCAR. It's hard to believe that the biggest spectator sport in America is not football. It's not baseball. It's NASCAR. And yeah, I know. What's NASCAR? You know they drive around the track at 200 miles an hour? Yeah. And if Folgers is the official coffee of NASCAR, that's what they buy. They buy Folgers. And so this mutual fund invests in the companies that are the official sponsors. Paws Tombstone Fund. Paws is the name of the company. Tombstone is the name of the fund. What do you think they invest in?
Pizza.
That's what I thought. Pizza? No. Tombstones? Not beer. Cemeteries. Mortuaries. Caskets. Well, everybody going to die sometime. And thankfully, so did the Paws Tombstone Fund. And then you cannot make this stuff up. There was a fund called the Chicken Little Growth Fund. Because the person that you invested in that, if you're worried about the
Sky Fund,
there was the, I don't know if it's still around, the Timothy Fund. Timothy, for Christians, because there was something in the letter from Paul to Timothy about capitalism or something like that. And then there's you don't believe me. Look it up. There's a Muslim fund, halal or something like that. Because Muslims and the Christians used to not allow interest. That was usury. We weren't allowed to. That's why the Jews were so important to the Christians. Even though they were slapping them around, the Jews were allowed to lend money because they could earn interest. Christians weren't allowed to do that. And the Muslims are still, they don't like it. So there was a fund, I don't know if it's still around, that they come in, they're basically bond funds, but they don't pay interest. Figure that out. I don't know how it works. Look, I don't know how it works. It's juicy rationalization. So the choices are endless and so are the fees. Now, we need to discuss index funds because index funds have become a potent force in the industry. These are mutual funds that buy and hold a portfolio of stocks or bonds equivalent to those in a specific market index. Now, we'll discuss the Dow Jones Industrial Index, the Standard & Poor's 500, the Russell 2000, in detail later on in Chapter 5. But there is no active management performed, as we discussed last week. These are passively managed. So what's the term? Passively managed. A passively managed fund is an index fund. Why? Well, as we saw, they can offer much lower annual fees, and it turns out that many actively managed mutual funds do not beat the market. So is there any value added to their active management? No. Because of the annual fee, an index fund cannot actually match the market's performance. But it should come very, very close, provided the annual fee is not excessive. And as we saw with the Vanguard Index 500, it didn't quite match the Standard & Poor's 500 over the last 10 years, but it came really darn close. However, be careful. Some of these things, as we'll see, have high annual fees. Why? Why does the dog lick?
Because they can.
Because they can, right? They sneak him into a 401k plan, and they hope that people don't catch him and scream and holler at him. I'm going to show you one from Southwestern that does this. Whereas the actively managed fund could substantially outperform or underperform the market index. Now, where did they come from? They came from the late 1960s, early 1970s. The rationale for index funds came from research done in the early 70s that statistically showed that many of the actively managed funds did not beat the market. They didn't do better than a monkey throwing darts at a dartboard. And there's a book we'll take a look at called A Random Walk Down Wall Street. He was one of the guys who was involved in the research, and he went on to the board of Vanguard and was a big proponent of these. However, many actively managed funds do beat their respective indices over time. And what you're doing, what your job is, if you're an investor or if you want to recommend these things, is look for a fund family where most all funds have consistently beat their index over long-term periods. And there's only a few major companies. In the late 1990s, index funds became a victim of their own success. Now I'm going to okay, here's some of the indices. We will discuss all of these in detail in Chapter 5, so you don't have to memorize them. But Standard & Poor's 500, 500 largest companies in the United States. Dow Jones Industrial Average, you can't help but hear about this thing. It's just 30 stocks. It's not a very good index. The Dow Jones U.S. Total Markets, the U.S. Total Stock Market Index. I didn't come up with that name. It used to be called the Wilshire 5000. Then Dow Jones got together with them and called the Dow Jones Wilshire 5000. Wilshire is a company based in L.A., Wilshire Boulevard. And then they kicked Wilshire to the side and they called it the Dow Jones U.S. Total Stock Market Index. What a great name. Some people just call it the Total Market Index. Then there's the NASDAQ, which is technology, MSCI World, Global, IFA Index International, and there are countless other index funds available. You don't have to know these for exam number one. Exam number two, yes. Index funds are the current perfect investment. For the fail-safe, superlative treatment, visit IFA.com, which stands for Index Fund Advisor. What if any are the downsides? Well, here they are. And you're not going to understand this, but we're going to come back to this slide after we're done stocks, after we're done bonds, and you will understand it better. What happens is indices can become skewed. You know what the word skewed means? Bent, yeah. Bent out of shape. Pushed in one direction more than what you would think. An index is supposed to be balanced. It's supposed to go over the entire stock market of a company, a country, or an area, or the world. And what happens is sometimes these things get out of balance. They get bent. They get moved out of place. In the 1980s, most of you weren't alive, but you're worried about China taking over. Well, in the 1980s, Japan was going to take over. Anybody alive during that time? I was. And there was a song, I'm Turning Japanese. You can believe it. You can believe it. It was called I'm Turning Japanese. And the Japanese stock market just skyrocketed. It went way up, and people were just... The real estate was even worse. And at the end of the 1980s, the IFA, which is meant to measure the entire world, excluding the United States, had done really well. Why? Because Japan had done really well. And at the end of the 1980s, Japan made up fully 60% of the IFA. Now, the IFA is Europe, Australia, and the Far East. So that was Hong Kong, Australia, all of Europe, Western Europe, UK, France, Sweden and Norway and the Nordic countries, Germany. But Japan made up 60% of that with a PE of almost 52. Now, what's PE? Price earnings ratio. We'll discuss that in detail in chapters 5, 6, 17, and 7 and 8. Later. Everything else made up 40% with a PE of 13. Meaning that this was priced a whole lot less than that was priced. The Japanese stock market, I think hit 38,000 or 36,000 to fall to 8,000. So you see, you bought an index fund that measured the IFA thinking you were getting Australia and the Europe and the Far East, and most of what you were getting was Japan. And then the index went down. And the same thing happened at the end of the 1990s in the Standard & Poor's 500, which is the 500 largest companies in the United States. And in 1990, some of you were just children, but you remember the internet and pets.com and eToys and Home Grocer and DrCoop.com and TheGlobe.com. You remember all these? They're all gone. And information technology, you know, internet, computers, software, other related companies, wireless, made up one-third of the Standard & Poor's 500, whereas two-thirds were all the other companies, the old economy, right? The old economy, railroads and energy companies and chemicals and housing and all that made up two-thirds. The P.E. here was 60, very high by standard, by any kind of standard. The P.E. here was 20, still pretty high, but one-third of this. And the Standard & Poor's 500 then went down 50%, almost, it just touched 50% over the next 2.5 years. But the NASDAQ, which is mostly information technology, went down 80%. So you bought the S&P 500 thinking you'd get a broad range of all the 500 largest companies in the United States, and what you were buying, more than one-third of which were highly inflated technology companies. Are you with me? Understand? Most people, you don't go like this, I don't understand. Well, you will later on, you will. Because most people do not understand this relationship. They don't understand that an index is not perfect. It's just a list of stocks. So if you are convinced, the index's funds are for you, watch for these situations. And good advisors will say, well, we want to make sure you have a broad-based index, an index that is huge. The problem is now there are indices that are really, really small. So there, nothing is perfect. If you don't understand what I'm talking about, just make sure out of this you understand that there is no perfect investment. Okay? Is that enough?
Yeah.
All right. Now, the success of index funds bred a whole new category called exchange-traded funds. There are now some actively managed ETFs, but most all of them are passively managed. Most all of them are index funds. And these are, as we described in the first session, a mixture of open-end funds, meaning they can have as many shares as investors want. The more money that comes in, they just create shares. When people pull their money out, what do? Everyone says they redeem, they destroy the shares. So what happens when more money comes in? When more money comes in, they... when more money goes out. Okay, let me start over again. Okay, when more money goes... Oh, let's not start over again. You're trying to answer the second part. When money comes out, they... When money comes in, they...
Create,
expand, issue. They all mean the same thing. Okay. So when money comes in, they... When money goes out, they... That's how it works. But instead of, like an open-ended fund, instead of going to the mutual fund company, you have to buy these on the stock exchange. You buy and sell them on the stock exchange. They're becoming very popular because they can be bought and sold throughout the day. And so what people are doing now is they're using this as day trading vehicles, as trading vehicles. That's not what a mutual fund is for. So the best part about ETFs is they have cool names, like Spider and Diamond and Cube. Don't you want spiders? Because SPY is the name of the symbol for the Standard & Poor's 500. So they call them spiders. And DIA is the symbol for the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So they call them diamonds. You like that? That's cute. And the symbol for the NASDAQ is Q. Q, 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 Q. Now it's Q, Q, Q. First it was 4 Qs. And they went to 3 Qs. So instead of calling them Qs, they call them Qs. Okay. I've got to have some humor. No, we don't. Not bad. Socially responsible funds. Mutual funds that actively and directly incorporate ethics and morality into the investment decisions. They started out with some funds refusing to invest in companies that sold alcohol or tobacco.
That's the ones making most money.
Yeah. Move to companies that pollute, build weapons, nuclear power plants, destroy the rainforest, exploit labor. It's surprising if any companies left.
Wait. So how did the ethics and morality come in play?
How did it start?
No, when did those come in play? Because
When does what come in play?
It says they're incorporated directly in Epic and automatically.
Right.
They're not going to make good money in the
family. They're not. It's right. They're not going to make their money in the family. And there are some people, I mean, the ones that don't use tobacco or alcohol, some of them have been around for decades before the name socially responsible was around. Silliness aside, many socially responsible funds have done quite well for their investors. Why? Because it turns out many of these companies are technology companies that they can invest in. Because, you know, how can you argue with Google, right? They don't pollute. Well, I guess they do. They use energy for electricity. But they bought a bunch of wind farms and solar farms. Possibly as a backlash to socially responsible funds and their perceived political overtones, there is a fund called the Vice Fund. And yes, you guessed it, he loves Philip Morris. He loves Philip Morris. And all the other corporate nasties you can think of. And although it is still a very small fund with high annual fees, it's actually done very well for its investors. So go look up the Vice Fund. Yes?
What's wrong with the defense?
They make bombs.
Oh.
Some people don't want them to make bombs, so they don't want to invest in them. Remember, I'm not pushing it. I'm not telling you to go out and invest in it or not to invest in it. I just want you to understand what's out there and what you're up against, right? Because you have to make a decision. At the end of the day, you got to invest in something, right? You can't invest a dollar in 10,000 different mutual funds. You got to invest in something. Now, here's this from the fourth edition. This is from the Wall Street Journal. And these are expanded categories of mutual funds. So I just showed you the most overarching, the largest categories. They keep getting more and more and more and more differentiated. See what you're up against? Now, there's a company called Morningstar, and you may use them for your Chapter 4 research. They pioneered this way of analyzing funds. They called it the style box. To try to make some order out of the chaos that was happening, and instead what they did is they just created more, right? Exactly. Because now if you see these style boxes and you're an investor and you say, well, I have to have a mutual fund in each of those style boxes, don't I? No. But do you want a large value, a large blend, or a large growth fund? What the hell does it mean? Medium size, small size. They say that these are fabulous, and they now have a new one called ownership zones, which is basically the same thing, but it's an oval as opposed to a box. Think it's exciting? Well, I want you to go look at Morningstar. You don't have to. You can do pretty much everything on Yahoo or go to the mutual fund company. But Morningstar is one of the places you'll go. Lipper is their competitor, and Lipper's a whole lot better, but they don't give this stuff away free. See, what happens, you go to Morningstar's website, they'll give you much of the information free, but the whole time they're doing it, they're saying, hey, this is premium. Would you like to sign up for $10 a month, $50 a month? Hey, they're going to throw these things up on you. Hey, sign up for $30 a month. That's up to you. I'm not saying you do it. I don't get any kickback, but you do it if you want to. I'm not doing it. Because all this stuff is available for free at your local library. You've heard of libraries? You millennials, you've been to a library? There's a library in Chula Vista. It's right by the F Street and 4th Street. It's right by the... It's always closed. That's a good library. Okay, now. What happened is, as the mutual fund industry... Before we do this, I wanted to pass out the assignment sheet. Talks about the assignment sheet. Where is the assignment sheet? Here it is. Okay. Pass these out. Now that we've gone through the entire universe, sort of, your job is to pick one. Pick one mutual fund, maybe two, it's up to you. I think I only asked for one, or what do I say, one or two?
Two.
Two, okay. I think you only really have to do one. I think I said one, but whatever. Yeah, I got some extras passing this way. People in the back have to be on their ball. They have to throw things. Throw them that way. Move them that way. Okay. And what I've done is I've gotten some manual reports. Now, this is mostly just from American funds because they're the ones I do business with. But you can go to, there's six links on my website for annual reports. That's just six companies. There are dozens of companies. Everybody get one? Okay, good. Okay, great. So you're going to choose one. Now, what I have up here, I have some domestic growth, international growth, global growth, international and domestic growth and income, equity income. I've got some bond funds. And what else? Balance funds. So you decide which one you want. Most of them are stocks, some of them are bonds. And I think I got one money market, I think. For those of you who are really worried about the market, you want to read about a money market and realize that you ain't going to get nothing from them. But at least you won't lose money. And so that's going to be your assignment. You're going to research one company. Now, much of what you need is in the annual report. But some of it will be on the company's website. Some of it will be in Yahoo, some of it in Morningstar, or Lipper. You can go to the library, use the internet. It's up to you. And I hope you have fun doing this. That's the assignment. So when we leave today, I will come by, and don't leave without coming by and getting one of these annual reports. I get them for free. They're very kind to me, but they obviously they cost. So when you're done with it, please bring it back, and I'll use it next semester. Then on the other page is the Thrift Savings Plan. The Thrift Savings Plan is the 401k plan for the federal government. If you're a federal employee, or if you're in the military, you have available to you the TSP. And it is actually a very good plan. Why do I like it? Because it is simple. There are five choices. Five. And I'm going to show you Southwestern's, which has 55 or 60. I don't know how many. I haven't counted, but it's dozens. And what happens, and I've seen it happen, where do I start? It turns out the studies have shown that when you give employees fewer choices, their participation rate goes up. They can understand it. And then it has five or six of the lifestyle funds. So in the first question, actually, his first question is, what's the website? Figure that one out. See if you can figure that one out. Not too hard. Number two asks you for the primary funds. Don't do the lifestyle funds, the L funds. I'm going to ask you a question about those later. And so check out the 401k. Anybody in the military here? Just one? Do you have anything in the TSP? Good man. All right. 20 years. Now, they don't match, do they? The federal government?
4 or 5 good funds.
But do they match when you put in $50? Do they put in
$50? No, they actually reinvest
it. Right, they reinvest, but they don't match. If you put in $100, they don't put in $50. I don't think so. I'm pretty sure they don't. I don't think they do. Oh well, businesses do. 403Bs at colleges, no. At schools, no. So that's your assignment. Questions on that? We'll come back to it again on Tuesday. Now, fund families. The companies that issued mutual funds used to issue one or two funds. But then as competition got fiercer and fiercer, and this happened, this explosion, the fund families started to get huge and had dozens and dozens, some have hundreds of funds. You can move your money from one fund to another fund within a fund family almost always with no charge. Maybe if you do it within 30 days, they'll hit you with a charge. But normally, if you're a responsible investor, you can move it from one fund to another fund, no problem. But if you're not in a retirement account, a 401k, a Roth IRA, you're going to generate a taxable transaction because the IRS says if you go from your growth fund to an equity income fund, you're going to have to pay taxes. If you made money, if you lost money, then you get to declare capital loss. So you're going to generate a taxable transaction. Usually, it's not a whole lot of money. It's not a big deal. But recently, what companies are doing is they're charging people 1 or 2% for excessive transfers within the fund. And this is done to discourage market timing by investors. It's a mutual fund. It's a long-term investment. Don't move around every month or so. Some of them just allow you a certain number of movements within a year. Our 403B plan says you can move it 10 times a year, that's it. After that, you can't do it anymore. You can always change your allocation and how much what goes into the fund, but what goes into the system, you can say, well, I'm not going to put money into the growth and income. I'm not going to put it into the equity income. But with the money that's in there, you can only move it around 10 times a year. You understand? It's a long-term investment. And fourth, I like this. I wish I had come up with it. Choose a family, not a fund. Here are the top 10 mutual fund companies as of December 2011. According to the Investment Company of Institute, Vanguard is now the supreme one. For many years, it was Fidelity was the largest. And these three, for many years, have been the top three. American is always number two or three. Vanguard, Fidelity, American. PIMCO, Pacific Investment Company, is based up in the Newport Beach, somewhere up in Orange County, and they have the distinction of having the world's largest mutual fund, the Total Return Bond Fund, run by a gentleman by the name of Bill Gross. J.P. Morgan, they bought a whole bunch of other different mutual fund companies, and now they're the fifth largest. Franklin Templeton, very good company. There's a link on the website. Check them out. Very good company. We'll talk about Sir John Templeton later on. BlackRock, they're the ones that... That's not all they do, but they're the ones that got the contract with the government for the TSP. And there's what, 2-3 million federal employees, including the military? Pretty sweet deal, huh? Federated. I feel so sorry for people who invest in Federated. They go, what? What?
Why?
For the same reason I feel sorry for people who bought Yugos.
Who what?
Yugos. You don't go. That's what they should have called them. How about T. Rowe Price? Very good company. Check out T. Rowe Price. The link on the website. And then the Bank of New York, the nation's oldest bank, bought a company called Dreyfus, which is an old mutual fund company. So what we're going to do now is we're going to take a look at Fidelity. And this is kind of old, but the good thing about it is that it shows it easily. When you go to my website, and if I have time, I'll show them to you. Fidelity's website is just... It's even worse than this thing. They'll show you, I'll show you real quick. One of their websites, you can't even tell. They kind of hide it from you. Where is it? No, not that one. Oh, here. They just, Fidelity Funds Network. Here, you know, look at our domestic stock funds, our international and global funds, our bond funds. They kind of hide all the different funds. But you go to this one, they only show you 146 Fidelity funds. There are over 400. But then they show you the 5,681 funds that they have available through other mutual fund companies. You see, these other mutual fund companies have, you know, they see how big Fidelity is. It's the second largest mutual fund company. So they've tagged along. They've, they've said, okay, we'll allow you to sell our funds through your website. So now you go to Fidelity's website and you can invest in over 6,000 funds. Which one do you want? All right, let's go back to the. There it is, and this is from 2009. They don't publish this anymore. I wish they did because it's easy to understand that this industry is too damn big. Each and every one of these is a mutual fund, folks. So let's go through the first page. Large cap value category. Blue chip value, equity income two. They have two equity income funds. Large cap value, 135/30. Large cap, disciplined equity, dividend growth, fidelity fund, growth and income portfolio, mega cap stock, stock selector, tax management stock, trend, value discovery, blue chip growth, capital appreciation, contra fund, very good fund. Export and multinational, fidelity 50, focused growth, focused stock, growth company, growth discovery, independence, large cap growth, large cap stock, Magellan, OTC portfolio, mid cap value, leverage company stock, low price stock, value strategies, growth strategies, mid-cap strategies, page one, there's eight more pages. Which one you want? And that's just the stock funds. We're not even done with the stock funds. Mid-cap growth, small-cap blend, small-cap growth. Here are their index funds. They have a bunch of index funds. You can't beat them, join them. Vanguard became number one with index funds. They're going to come up. And notice they use the word Spartan, as we saw in the first number, Spartan, meaning... Cheap, right, cheap. Extended market, total market. What's the difference? We will learn in Chapter 5 between what's the difference between extended market and total market. It's a very subtle distinction. And then U.S. equity index. That means stocks, if you didn't know that. Broadly diversified. Now, here's where we get into international, right? International, global. What's the difference between global and international? Global means... International mean?
Outside.
So what does overseas mean? I guess it means international. I don't know. Call them up and ask them. And then, look, you can invest in a mutual fund company that only invests in Canada, or China, or Europe capital appreciation, or Japan smaller companies, or Nordic Volvos and Saabs and Nokia in Norway, Finland, Sweden, and then the Pacific Basin. Emerging markets. Emerging Europe, Middle East, Africa, Latin America. Look at how well the Latin American mutual fund has done as of 2009. Hoo, hoo, hoo. And then international index funds. Yikes! And then here we come with their specialty, their sector funds. Each and every one of these is a mutual fund that just invests in that sector of the economy. Does that make sense? As far as I'm concerned, no. If you know something about the sector you work in, okay, and you think it's going to do really well, you know, put 5, 10% into energy. But what's the difference between energy and energy service? This is the company, energy service are the companies that actually build the rigs and the drilling equipment. Energy is the company that pulls it out of the ground, refines it, and sells it to you. Gold, healthcare, home finance, industrial equipment, IT services, medical delivery, medical equipment, multimedia. Are you getting the sip from the fire hose, deer in the headlights feel? Natural gas, natural resources, pharmaceuticals, water utilities, wireless. Oh, finally, wait a minute, did I miss the... Poopy? Did I miss the bomb? Oh, poop. I was looking for... there they are. There they are. No, they aren't. Bond funds. Oh, we're down to bond funds. Oh, no, we're coming back up to bond funds. Oh, sorry, going too fast. And then look at all the bond funds. Ginnie Mae are the government-backed bonds. Spartan index funds, intermediate, short term, ultra short. An ultra short bond fund will be like a money market. Muni bonds, look at all the state specific. California, they have two California bond funds. And continuing with bond funds, high yield, there's their junk bond. Here are the ones I'm looking for. There's their junk bond funds. And there are the asset allocation funds. Notice they have a bond fund, they have a balance fund called Balanced, and they have a fund called Dynamic Strategies. Remember? Balance versus asset allocation. Without knowing any more about the fund, just looking at the name, you would think that the balance fund would be more keeping a balance, and the Dynamic Strategies means we're going to try to determine which is the more important. I don't know. Look it up. I wouldn't want to get involved with it. And now here we get to the funds that Blanca was having a trouble with here. The target date and target risk and income replacement. You see, if you're going to retire in 2035 and you don't want to make any of these decisions, you buy the 2035 fund. Are you with me? And so as 2035 comes into view, as we get closer and closer to that date, we will move from primarily stocks. We'll keep some stocks, but we'll mostly move to bond. You see what's going on? That's how they work. And that's part of your assignment in the TSP, because the TSP doesn't have that many. They only go up here to 2050, but after Fidelity's probably got, I like what they call it, Freedom Fund. Freedom. They're based in Boston. And now money market. Look how many money market funds they have. This drives me insane. Why do you need all those money market funds? The answer is we don't. Now, these are all the educational savings, the college retirement. Look, if your kid's going to go to college in 2027, you'd buy the 2027 fund. Make sense? Yes? No? Some of you are going to sleep. Okay, I'll try my best. And then they do the California one. They do the Delaware. They do the Arizona. They do the New Hampshire. They do the Massachusetts. Well, they're based in Boston. You would think they would do the Massachusetts. And there you go. Over 400 funds. Which one you want?
The first one.
Yeah, better first quick. Okay, now let's take a look at Vanguard. Again, on the website, you can take a look at Vanguard's And there they are. They don't publish the thing I'm going to show you because they want you to go online and do it. The thing I want to show you was last published, what, in 2007? But it shows you all. What I like about it is it shows them all on one page, even though Vanguard has, they've added about 20-some funds since then. But they go from the least riskiest. They start with the money market funds, and they go through the bond funds to the stock funds. They have their own target retirement, their life strategy funds that you use in 401k plans. Notice they have short-term bond funds, then intermediate term, and then long-term. They're trying to show you that we start from the least riskiest and move to the riskiest until finally they have the sector funds and international global. 140-some funds. Which one do you want? Prime. Good fund. Prime Capital. But it's not run by Vanguard. Vanguard pays somebody else to do it for them. Vanguard doesn't have the best stock pickers, but they pay other people who are good. Where is it? The Wellington. Wellington Fund has been a great fund over the decades. And then their claim to fame are the index funds. There's the 500 index fund. That's their big, that's the one that made them rich. Now for something completely different. Let's take a look at American. This is wrong one. I'm going to do that one. Okay. This is American funds. And they only have, I think they added a couple of like 36 or so, 37 funds. And what they do is they go from the riskiest down to the least riskiest. You see it's red, meaning
danger.
And then orange, or whatever you call it, there's their growth funds, growth and income, equity income, balanced bond funds, and then the tax-exempt bond funds. And look at the money market. Look what it's paying. Zero, nothing. Okay, most companies will put 0.01 there. They'll put a 0.01 there to tell you that, you know, we're going to give you a little bit. But they're not making any money. So American is like, well, we're not making any money. You're not going to make any money. So, yeah. Over 1 year, right. This was 2011. 2011 was not very good for global stocks. United States was basically flat. The United States was flat in 2011, but many of these are global, and they got hit pretty hard. But that's nothing. That's nothing. 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 Look at the lifetime. Not there, huh? But what I want you to see is what happens as we go from the stocks. You see 10, 10, 9, 12, and then this one was just started in 2011, so it doesn't count. But then down to the bond funds, you see 8, 7, 5, right? And then you go down to the muni bonds, you see 4, 2.7. So, I like American because they have so few funds. But just hang on a minute. I'm going to show you one more company. One of my favorite companies is called Dodge & Cox. They've been around since 1931, right? And look, they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 funds. Everybody thinks they're dumb, they're weird, and yet over. Well, that's a new fund. Don't look at that one. But 10.6. 7.3, 7.8, 6.8 for bond fund. That's not too bad. Okay. But do sometimes things not turn out so well? Yeah. I'm going to show you what happened in 2008. That's the wrong one. I'm going to show you what happened in 2008. But look, the growth funds went down 40%, 50%. The growth in income went down 34%, 40%, 38%, 36%. The equity income went down 33%, 32%, 34%. The balance fund went down 30%. The junk bond fund went down 30%, but look at the bond fund. They went down too. Everybody went down 2008, but how badly?
Not bad.
Not bad at all. In fact, if you were in a government bond fund, because why? Everybody took their money and moved it over here. So, is this going to happen again?
Yeah.
You bet. Yes.
Prior to 2008, what were those numbers? When was last time?
Well, 2002 wasn't too cool, but it wasn't anywhere near as bad as this. 1973?
Oh, wow.
1970, yeah.
2002 wasn't as bad, but...
It was not good, but it wasn't anywhere near as bad as... You have to go back to 1973, and before that, you have to go back to 1937, 1932. You have to go back to the Great Depression, yeah. Okay, now, as you leave, tell me what you want. You want a global growth, a domestic growth, growth in income, equity income. I got bond funds, money market balance. So come on up.